The Howling. Somewhere in this city, in this human jungle, it begins.
Are you something?
What do you see?
Somewhere in these woods, in this primal, sensuous, secret place, lies an experience too terrifying for words.
Hi everybody, we are the Bitter End Podcast and we are back. My name is Todd Jordan.
And I'm Tom Denny.
And let me tell you, we are hungry like the wolf because tonight we are here to watch The Howling.
The Howling.
Kickstarting season 3. Now, if any of you have not listened to this podcast before, hi, welcome. How's it going? I like your shoes. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be watching all 8 Howling films, one at a time, as we go through the whole franchise, tracking our way to the bitter end.
Yep, see where it's good, where it's bad, and where it don't make no sense.
Because this is a bit of a strange franchise, because I have seen the first film before. Tom, have you seen any of these films?
I haven't seen none of them. I don't really know. I mean, I know what a werewolf is.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Well, I don't believe that you have seen werewolves quite like these before, because I saw the first Howling years ago when I was at university, and it blew my tiny mind, man. I know this film was absolutely massive in the 80s. I didn't get around to it until sort of the noughties or so, because I was a wee tiny baby in the 80s. But it made such a big impression on me. And then I found out it was directed by Joe Dante, the man behind Gremlins, the man behind the recent reboot of the Looney Tunes cartoons. So, you know, and you can kind of see all of that in there. It's got some huge people in it, some really big players. And yet, it's got all of these sequels, but it's not made such a big impact on, like, no one's really talking about The Howling anymore.
No, and it is weird, that thing that obviously people aren't talking about it, but there's got to be something about it that has managed to have it, like, spawn, like, 7 sequels that have gone through. I think, like, the most recent one was some point in the noughties.
It was 2011.
So
we're recording this now in 2016. So yeah. Last 5 years. That's a big deal.
And as we talk now, apparently in 2015, it was announced that they would be rebooting. But I don't think any other news has come out since. So who knows? It may have gone straight into development hell.
Yeah, yeah. But before we dive in, the basic rules. Don't worry if you can't get hold of these films, if you're not that interested in watching them. We're going to watch them so you don't have to. We're going to rate them, we're going to talk about them, we're going to explain them. So don't worry. If you do want to watch the films, awesome. They're pretty easy to get hold of. You can get them on digital, you can get the DVDs. It's not a problem. Now, this trailer, we just watched the trailer for the 1981 film The Howling. It's pretty 80s.
It's a very 80s trailer. It's great. It's got that proper 80s. You don't really get trailers nowadays where you've got that voiceover guy, the guy with that voice. And this guy, he's not as deep as you usually have in those. He's not like down here. He's not like Cobra was a cop who wouldn't die. It's a little bit high. Sounds to my ears a bit like William Shatner, but without all the stuttering.
The Howling.
And I think it's really great stuff, the way this trailer's put together. It's like lots of shots of just the city. You know, so for a start, you think a lot of werewolf movies before this one would have been
more rural.
Rural, like American Werewolf in London. The whole point of that is that you've got a big city guy finding himself in, I mean, I know he's in London, that's a big city too, but the bulk of the actual horror part, the bit where he gets attacked, that's in the middle of nowhere, right? It's in the countryside.
Yeah, it's always, you know, people getting sprung on the moors, isn't it?
Yeah.
And getting cursed.
And the original Wolfman, obviously, that's also involves an American going to London and getting stuck in a village. Well, actually, not in London. He's in some sort of weird pseudo-European place where everyone speaks English, but they're all like driving in like horse and carts.
I mean, so those two films, those are like two werewolf films that I have seen a long time ago. Don't really remember loads about them, but that's your standard werewolf fare. And the only other one I've seen is the film Ginger Snaps.
I haven't seen Ginger Snaps.
And that one is set, that's like a suburban film. So it's still not in the big city. There's still sort of, you know, they live next door to a forest, so there's a lot of that. This is very urban.
Yeah, it's really grimy. It's like New York, like bright lights, like the opening shots of the trailer are almost like Taxi Driver or something. And he's like, oh, it's a jungle out there. Everyone's an animal.
Yeah. Oh, this it's talking about like about these times of like these is it like primal, sensual times.
Primal, sensuous.
So I'm looking forward to seeing how all that pans out.
Yeah, I mean, there's some quite, at least one quite famous sex scene in this.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that this is a pretty good, like a very good, well-made horror film. Mm. And one of the most famous scenes from it is a sex scene, not a kill or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm really looking forward to sitting next to you and watching that and feeling slightly awkward until, yeah. until you work out why it's so famous.
Okay. I mean, whenever a film comes up that we watch that has a sex scene, we do sit there and feel very awkward about the whole affair. So let's keep it rolling with season three.
You also asked about the trailers full of lots of these little smiley face stickers.
Yes, yeah, I noticed a lot of those popping up. So is that's a thing, I'm guessing.
That's
it's a motif.
Thing. It will make sense as you watch the film. I'm really curious to ask you, do you have any idea what this film is going to be about?
Not really. It looks as though there is, I guess, our central protagonist maybe is this like young lady with blonde hair who works at a TV station.
Played by Dee Wallace, the world famous Dee Wallace, massive scream queen. She was in E.T. She's in loads and loads of stuff.
Yeah. And so it seems like, and it looks as though maybe she has the werewolf curse. It looks like there's a transformation that might be happening there with her. You don't see the werewolf. You don't see any werewolves. I mean, you know, it's a horror trailer. You don't blow your wad in the trailer. You've got to keep it all hidden. That's cool. But no, it doesn't really give you a sense of what the story is. So nice bit of anticipation there. Makes you worry that it's a horror film, so maybe there isn't much of a story. but I'm ready to find out. You know, like Gremlins, that's a great film, and like you know, like visually pretty gnarly, pretty scary stuff. So I'm interested to see what this dude does with like just a balls to the wall horror film.
Absolutely, the effects in particular, I haven't seen this in a very long time, but I remember them being a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Rick Baker, I think, is the man in charge of practical effects on this.
Yeah. Just looking forward to some good old-fashioned 80s practical effects.
All right, brah. So before we slam ourselves head first, like Howlin' Wolf into a rack of ribs, we got to play the IMDb game, the guessing game. So I went on IMDb and I looked up the rating that this movie has out of 10 decimal points allowed.
Mm.
Would you like to take a punt, Tom, on what you think The Howling from 1981 earned?
I'm going to say, I mean, it's probably going to be like the highest one out of any of these ones we're going to watch. Still, it's a horror film and horror films don't usually, even like ones that are considered to be good horror films, don't get like big ratings on things like IMDb. So I'm going to say 6.7.
Dude, it's 6.6.
Oh, so close. It's the closest I've ever been.
Well done. And that is still, as you say, a pretty high rating for an IMDb horror film.
Because
a lot of people seem to rate these that just don't like horror films. I don't really know why they do that.
Either that or like people who like horror are just like, oh, yeah, that's definitely the best one, but it's still not very good. And it's kind of like, what are you doing, guys? Why are all the films you're watching? Why don't you like any of them? Watch something else if that's how you feel.
All right, well, let's find out whether or not we agree with him. Are you ready to go in, Tom?
Let's do it.
Wolfie, Wolfie! Gosh, that was a Wolfie film.
It was the wolfiest thing I've seen in quite a long time.
Certainly for some years.
Yes. Yeah, you don't get a lot of wolf in these days. So it was good. It was a tonic, I think. Vampires, zombies, go fuck yourself.
Refreshingly wolfy.
Give me...
Did you like it?
I did like it, yeah. I thought that was genuine. That was a good like horror movie. A lot of suspense in it. I was digging it.
Kind
sure.
of throws you for a loop, I think, after some of the films we've been watching. Not all bad, certainly. But when you see a film that's actually properly made and has like layers and
it's definitely like, I know that we liked the first Friday the 13th film, and this is like came out the same year, did it, I think,
or 1 year after
but this is a much more serious concern, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think part of that might just be down to, like, this is a horror film. It's not a slasher film. Like, it's a different kind of tone. It's a different kind of storytelling.
It's also based on a novel. And I might have my facts wrong here, but I think the story goes that the novel was written and bought by a publisher. And before the novel was even released, the studios were vying to buy the rights to turn it into a film. I'm not quite sure why, but like word had gotten out that this was going to be a big deal.
Well, it was a good purchase, I think. It's a good movie.
So we should probably...
Yeah, let's run it down.
Slow this wagon train down and just talk through like...
What's
what happens
on
in the film? What the fuck is it about? Tom, would you like to set the scene?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to say like the beginning to this film is really tight. It's really good. Possibly just like my favorite bit of the whole movie is just kind of like how it kicks off. Like it starts off like just from the very beginning, you've got like the cool Howling logo that comes up, this like slashed flesh kind of like looking graphic, and then an exploding screen.
The screen smashes and like it was made of glass and there's all blue light behind
it. I think they did that in like maybe Friday the 13th part 2. Like anything like that was like the screen, whoa! Yeah, love that. And like it's very atmospheric. Like before you actually see any of the characters as well, the credits are rolling. You've got this like flickering static television, this like montage of news pieces and things like that, and you're kind of like, okay, like this seems more, yeah, it's like modern, a bit more like technology than
modern
this
for 1981 at least.
Yeah, well, I mean, for a werewolf story, you know, you would maybe expect a werewolf story to open on like, you know, misty windswept moors or something like that, but no, like you have this big kind of like montage of static and noise, and then you're like in like this very grimy neon rundown sleazy streets.
Now I got this wrong when we were talking about the trailer. I said New York, that was my boo-boo. It is LA. Just to call that out.
Yeah, and so this, it's like a really good kind of like, this is like a good urban horror setting, like where it's sleazy and run down and it feels dangerous.
Yeah.
And would feel, you know, like that people watching would be like, that's not somewhere that I would want to be.
And this is what's so good about the opening sequence, because we center on our heroine who's called Karen White. She's played by Dee Wallace, later called Dee Wallace Stone in real life. And she is, she looks out of place. You know, she's not meant to be there. She's dressed nicely. She's visibly uncomfortable where she is, but she's there for a reason because she's got a job to do, right?
Yeah,
Tom?
Yeah. So yeah, she's like, there's like this like prostitutes and like sex shops and things like that. So it's like, yeah, she really sticks out like a sore thumb. And the intro to this film just kind of throws you in. It doesn't really like set up people. It kind of lets their characters kind of unfold in a bit more of an organic way than just like coming, you know, having someone really like drop some really clunky line that goes like, "God damn it, Todd, I've known you for 25 years and you do this and ba 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 and our relationship is this." It just kind of slowly unfurls. Yeah, so she is involved in what seems to be a sting operation. She's talking to the police on, like, she's got a hidden mic in her handbag. They're having trouble like communicating with her because of all the neon interfering with the signal. So there's instantly tension because she is meeting up with this guy who's been called Eddie, who's been harassing her, calling her, like leaving weird messages for her. So she's trying to, and they think that he is a killer.
Called Eddie the Mangler.
Yeah.
Sick name.
Yeah, so she's basically bait. So then there's this tension because they're like losing the signal because of all the neon in the area. And in the control room with like the cops is her husband, Bill.
Yeah.
Who's the guy with the mighty, mighty moustache.
Like a velour cardigan.
Oh, man. That is a look. And then there's like her... Karen works as a news reporter. And so then she's got her two reporter buddies, Terry and Christopher. They're a couple.
and they're just like kind of listening out for her.
And they're going, oh, it's not so, they're getting really worried for her. Like one of them's really intently listening and trying to make, just being like not comfortable with the situation, trying to make sure it's all okay. The other one's going, you've got to pull her out of there. You've got to pull her out of there. It's like so much tension.
Yeah.
And like the music's really subtle and they keep cutting back and forth between like a live news broadcast that's going on, which is an interview with this psychologist, and then cutting through her like really nervously walking through the streets and getting like approached by strange men, and what she's looking for is those yellow smiley stickers. That is Eddie the Mangler's mark, and he has told her to follow the smiley stickers.
Yeah, she talks to him briefly on in a phone booth, and then he tells her to go into this sex shop, and she kind of goes through the back. It's really, you know, uncomfortable because literally everyone in the sex shop leaves when like a real life lady comes in. They're like, and then she goes into the back where they've like got one of those booths where they're like showing porn films, and so she goes in, and Eddie's there in the shadows.
You don't see him; he's behind her when she sits down, and already the tension is like razor sharp.
Yeah, and like he's there talking to her while there's this like really kind of like quite kind of like violent porn showing, and then his voice starts to change and get all kind of monstery, and was he saying something like, oh, I want to give you a gift, or you other people, they don't understand me.
There's so, like, he says something along the lines of the others felt no pain, Karen. They're not real people, not like you and me. I know that you're different. And then he says this weird line. I think it's something along the lines of, I want to set your body alight, Karen.
Yeah. And it's just like, whoa, this is, yeah, this shit is tense here. And then she turns round, and we, unseen to us, something changes. There's something about his appearance that like terrifies her. And then these two cops that have been trailing her like barge in. And one of them, who's like a young rookie, just like hears the screaming and just wildly fires bullets into the porn booths.
His partner goes like, nice one, quick draw, McGraw.
Yeah. And it's just kind of like, that is some bad policing. Just like randomly, like you're hearing a loud noise and firing through doors. Any number of perverts could have been killed in there.
Yeah.
God damn it.
And then the young cop who did the firing, he's like totally pale, sweaty, traumatized. The older cop is like scolding him for firing his gun so quick, and then they look at the body of Eddie the Mangler. We don't see the body, but the old one just goes, my God.
Yeah. And Karen is all distraught, and then we're kind of out of that. They're
leading her into an ambulance.
Yeah. And so when we were watching this, you said like basically this film starts at the point that most horror films end.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's why it was really cool. That's why I enjoyed it so much. And it's just really well shot and really well paced.
So interesting coming from the man behind Gremlins as well.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So, I mean, cracking opening to this movie. So you mentioned that there is this this doctor or this psychologist who's being interviewed on the TV.
Dr. Wagner.
Yeah. Now he seems to be like, Karen is a news anchor, and I get the impression that maybe he works for he's like the go-to.
Like, it's unclear from the film.
He keeps on popping up. Like, that she goes and talks to him in a kind of like patient psychiatrist fashion, but then he's obviously also like somehow affiliated with the TV.
I think what it is during the opening sequence, when she's doing the sting operation, Dr. Wagner, who's played by the British actor Patrick McNee from the British TV show The Avengers, he's also in Spinal Tap, he's also in the Oasis video for Don't Look Back in Anger.
Yeah, and he's also in Thunder in Paradise, starring Hulk Hogan, apparently, according to IMDb.
Yeah, if you don't know him, like, as soon as you hear his voice or see his face, you'll be like, oh, it's that guy! You'll know him. So he's this very plummy, very British psychiatrist. I think that what it is that he's at the news station doing a live interview about this book he's written called The Gift.
Which is about
like making the most of your life. It's this vaguely kind of motivational COD psychology book. And then I think what happens
There's animalist. He makes a lot of like animal references in it. So
there's a beast within all of us.
Yeah. So then instantly you're kind of like, okay. Well, we're going to see what happens with this guy.
And then I think when Karen is obviously completely traumatized by this horrible experience she had with Eddie the Mangler, she has no memory of what happened in that room, for one thing. her boss at the TV station is like, I'm going to get you checked out. Don't worry. Only the best of my staff. We've just met the psychologist. I know one. Yeah. We'll send you to him. So I think that's how the relationship happens.
So basically what the doctor then suggests is that Karen should go to the colony. Now, the colony is, that's like the Dr. Wagner's kind of like retreat.
Yeah, it's upstate California in the hills.
Yeah, that he runs for patients. You know, he says like, oh, there'll be like group therapy and exercises. And it's just, you know, to try and help her come to terms with things. So she goes there with her husband, Bill. They drive up there. Bill drives there with her in a fucking headlock the whole time.
He's very possessive,
yeah,
Bill.
He's like this really, you know, he's just, he's very Chuck Norris light. It's just like the most manly way to drive a car. Driving with one hand on the wheel, one with your woman just wrapped in a fucking headlock. It was very strange, but 1981, okay. And then they get there and like instantly you're at this like really weird kind of like debauched beach party, and like, you could think like, I thought this was meant to be a retreat for, I don't know, people with emotional or psychological problems and things like that, but instead it's just like people drinking beer and like eating, like having a massive like barbecue on the beach and like necking, and there's instantly a lot of sexual tension flying around with some of like the characters that get introduced.
Let's talk through some of the characters at the colony, because at first it seems like they suddenly introduce you to quite a dizzying array of characters very, very quickly.
I mean, you already like had met quite a lot of characters in the opening kind of sting scene. So like, and I think just from like watching like the horror films we've been watching recently, I was like, fucking hell, this is a slasher film. We've got to kill a lot of people. We're going to be here all day.
Yeah, it's important. So, I mean, we'll get to it, but this isn't a very kill-heavy film.
No, it's not.
But that's not what it's about. It's about the wolfiness, right?
Yeah.
But so these characters we've got, there is like a douchebag software developer, like yuppie guy, who wears a cowboy hat, but he's a bit of like a weekend warrior. He's married to, it's hinted at possibly alcoholic, slightly more damaged, younger wife that
she's a bit kooky.
Yeah, and they're not, clearly not very happy together.
Yeah. And then there's Marsha, who is like this kind of like very like gothy, hippie-ish character who someone says is like meant to be a nymphomaniac.
She's dressed like a combination with like between Elvira and what a sort of a 50s movie would interpret a Native American witch doctor to be. It's like sort of some combination of those.
It's a strong look.
Yeah, it's like long black hair, but like a dream catcher around her neck.
Yeah, and she's got a brother called TC, who is, he's a bit kind of a weird loner.
He wears sheepskin.
Yeah, like just like the, like so much sheepskin, and he's a bit feral. He's a bit like kind of like, he's a bit of a man child.
And the psychologist has been giving TC books to read, trying to teach him to read. And his sister's like, he's different. He doesn't need to know how to read. Leave him alone. You're putting ideas in his head.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of tension there. And then you've got Earl, who is...
Earl is the fucking tits.
He's crazy Earl. He's basically like this film's crazy Ralph. He just spends the whole beach party wandering around, just being kind of like mumbling to himself, like, I'm going to go out like that. And then he tries to throw himself on the fire. He's like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to live there. And they pull him away, and then everything's cool. They're like, nah, don't worry. Chill out in the morning. You'll be fine. You won't want to throw yourself on a fire and burn yourself to death.
Well, they say he does that every time there's a party. He just likes to be the center of attention. That's what they say.
Yeah, that's what they say. So instantly, this colony does not seem quite right.
And you get the impression Karen's there because the doctor told her to be there. And the doctor's there too. And like her husband, Bill, is clearly like, he's not bought into it, but he's there to support her.
Yeah, like it's quite weird. Like that in the beginning of the film, when there's the sting going on, he seems very concerned, obviously. He's on tenterhooks. But like, then here we've got this bit with the beach party, and as it progresses being in the colony, we see that I think maybe there's some like relationship issues with them.
Mm-hmm. Like there's they do a good job of kind of letting that like come out naturally.
Yeah, a lot of it seems to come out through sex. Like one of them will be like, do you want to do it? And they'll be like, oh no, I've just like was nearly killed by Eddie the Mangler, so I'm not really quite up to it. And he's like, okay, turns around, goes to sleep.
Yeah.
very sensitive handling there, Bill.
Well, he's not that sensitive. He's not as sensitive as he thinks he is, clearly.
No, because there is sexual tension there, particularly with Marsha, the hippie goth.
And so this is the point where the movie kind of chapter one ends and chapter two begins, which is a bit more classic 80s horror film action.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people walking through the woods in the mist. Sometimes during the day, there's some very, very scary scenes in the middle of the day, actually, which is quite good.
Yeah, yeah. But like you say, like from the trailer, that like a lot more of the film seemed urban. There was a little bit of log cabin stuff, but actually there is a lot in here that is rural.
So it's very, very interesting that they've changed a lot about sort of the werewolf mythology, and this is, as we'll get to, but they've kind of stuck still with the... I wonder if the concept of werewolves, the fear of werewolves, is a lot to do with kind of city people getting stuck in the countryside and... You know,
yeah, I think there's definitely something to that, because you know, us city people, some of us aren't very good in the countryside. I like going for, you know, like a nice country walk, and you know,
as long as there's a pub at the end of
it. As long as there's a pub at the end, and like the walk doesn't, you know, take too long, and there's no danger of me getting lost or stranded, I am fine. But I do not like camping. So
bit too wolfy.
Yeah, I just it's the wolves. I just worry about them.
So what happens? So
we've got the Terry and Christopher's storyline comes in. So they are investigating Eddie the Mangler's story for an upcoming TV show. So they are trying to like research him. They go to his apartment. They find all these like drawings of he's done of what looks like werewolves and a picture of like a landscape. And they're like, I wonder if that's a real place. I don't know.
What a shame the guy had real talent.
Yeah, exactly. And then you just kind of, they leave it like that. And then they kind of go and like carry on researching stuff.
They go to find his, they go to the morgue to try and find Eddie the Mangler's body.
Yeah, there's a great bit where the camera just pans over and you see that like the mortician's got his lunch on like one of those silver trays, you know, like on like a surgical tray, whatever. So he's got like a half-eaten hamburger, which is just like inches away from like a dissected brain.
Nice.
That is some good like trashy horror imagery. You don't get so much of that, but that is just kind of like zing, funny mortician.
I like to imagine this guy was the same funny mortician as from, I want to say, Friday the 13th, 4?
5.
No,
4. 4.
Yeah, he's like, he does like kooky little things, like before he opens the tray with Eddie the Mangler's body, before he like pulls the big drawer out, he knocks on the door and goes, visitors, Eddie!
Yeah, but then Eddie's not in there.
And there's like claw marks on the inside of the door.
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the fuck? And then that sets them off, like, on... I don't know why they suddenly go, like, right, so... Probably a werewolf?
Well, they don't do that.
They go to a bookshop that deals in, like, occult books.
It's because
a very big bookshop as well.
Like, Eddie's body had a tattoo of a wolf on it. And they had all those drawings of wolves in his bedroom.
Okay. So they
go to this occult bookshop, and the guy that owns it is Dick Miller,
yes,
who is a consistent feature in every Joe Dante film. Again, you'd know him if you saw him. He's the old man that's like a World War II veteran in Gremlins, maybe a NAM vet, actually.
Yeah, but he is that grumpy like neighbour.
Yeah. He's amazing, and he runs this bookshop, and he basically says, oh no, it's all crap to me,
yeah,
but whatever it is that you need, I've got a book about it.
Yeah. And so now here is an important, this is actually a very important scene in setting up like the lore of the Howling and what I assume will be the rest of the films going on.
I can only hope they're faithful to these few rules that we have.
So let's just maybe a little dip into Rules Corner.
Rules Corner.
Ow.
We're back. Rules Corner. 2.0, season 3. So, little quick stop here for Rules Corner, because the werewolf rules in this film are different from, like, say, what you would have seen in The Wolfman or an American werewolf
in London.
So there still seems to be the thing that, like, you get bit by a werewolf or you get scratched by a werewolf, you don't get killed, that you take on the curse.
May or may not, because there's some aspects of the plot we'll talk about a bit later once we've gotten to the end.
Well, it seems to me like if you don't get killed...
But
I'm not sure.
I've got my own theory. I think... We'll talk about this later, right?
Okay, we'll talk about this
later. I think that it's not a cut and dry thing. I mean, you probably will, but maybe not.
Okay, but what are the cut and dry rules here is that you can... They're basically werewolves are... The guy calls them shapeshifters and says they're not dependent on the full moon. They can turn into a wolf at any time.
For me, this is the most interesting part because a lot of what the classic, the Lon Chaney Jr. Wolfman, the whole point of that is that he's haunted by this, by the curse of being a wolf. He's tormented by it. Every full moon, he's like, no, not again, not again. That whole curse of like the werewolf will always kill the person that loves them the most. You know, you got to chain me up when the moon is full. In this, they don't give a fuck. They fucking live for it. They're all about it. They turn whenever they want.
It's a bit more... It makes it a bit more vampire-like. A bit more like something like The Lost Boys or something like that. Mm-hmm. That, you know, like not that vampires are always vampires, but they kind of embrace it more. Where the thing with werewolf stories is that they're terrified of what they're going to do. They basically have a split personality. Whereas in this, it's they can just like... fucking Hulk out and or wolf out, as
it would be.
The other rule here, silver bullets will kill werewolves, fire will kill werewolves, anything else, don't faze them.
They
will regenerate. So basically, like, the guy's like, you chop their arms off, you'll stab them in the face, blah blah blah, 2 days they'll be back. So that is, so that those are the two big rules that that need pointing out. So like, that's it, werewolf lore established. They're kind of on the right track now. Terry and Christopher, they're working it out.
Meanwhile, back at the colony.
Yes.
Karen's husband Bill is going rabbit hunting with the boys.
He's a vegetarian as well. This is something that is very strongly signposted, that he is a vegetarian, yet they're on a wolf hunt because they heard a wolf the night before. And he just shoots a rabbit just while he's out there, just because, you know, he's a right-on vegetarian, so fuck rabbits, bam!
I think it's that he's trying to be supportive and hang out with the boys. He makes a big thing of, like, Karen, don't worry, you do your therapy, I'm going to hang with the boys.
Yeah, or maybe he's just having trouble suppressing, like, his basic primal urges, which are stemming from that mighty moustache that he has.
So he ends up with his rabbit, and he's like, oh man, what am I going to do with this rabbit? And he bumps into TC, the feral man boy. And he's like, don't you know it's a sin to kill something and not eat it? And then the staunch vegetarian Bill is like, all right, I suppose I better eat it then. I don't know how to cook a rabbit. And he goes, my sister Marcia, the evil nymphomaniac, she's in the house just down there. She'll cook it up for you real good. And he goes, cool, that sounds like a sweet deal. And so he pootles on down to Marcia and he's like, oh, I've got this rabbit. Will you cook it up for me? And she goes, yeah, sure, I'll cook it up. She takes the rabbit, she gets a pot, she puts it on the heat. He goes, cool, when are we going to eat the rabbit? And she goes, later. And then she kisses him and then he slaps her and then he fucks off.
Yeah. And then in the middle of the night, he gets up, goes and finds her.
In the woods.
In the woods by a massive roaring bonfire. Bone down.
Bone down. Now this is the sex scene that I was talking about earlier. It's also our first werewolf transformation.
It is. So, like mid-coitus. We missed out something really major.
What did I miss?
That Bill got attacked by a werewolf before this.
When did he get attacked by a werewolf?
I think maybe after he left Marsha's.
You're right, it's probably her, so, right? Yeah, she gets like all like frustrated that he slapped her and like runs after him and...
Basically he's been attacked by a werewolf. He's got a scratch or a bite or something. So this means he's now got the curse. So now when they're boning down,
there's a big bonfire and they start to turn, both of them.
Yeah, so they get massive teeth. They start growing like every time you cut to them, their faces get more and more hairy.
And she's full like 70, like late 70s actress nude at this point, which is very full on, I've got to say. And then starts going through the transformation. There's no holds barred. Now, this feels to me like a good point to dedicate a little bit of time to the way that this movie does the transformations, because these are the money shots of of werewolf films, right?
Yeah, it's not some. It's not like about the kills. It's about it's about that transformation. Yeah. So
there's two big transformation scenes in this film. There's this one. There's the bonfire sex scene, and there's another one a bit later. So this one, It always seems to start in the teeth. They get these big, long, fangy teeth and yellow eyes, right? Which are super cool, super scary. Then a little light dusting of fur, just a little light dusting of like wispy fur, and then. The next things, which are the two creepiest elements that I would say, is that there's long fingers, like too many knuckles, you know, like the hands look a bit like spiders or something.
Yeah.
And then the snout comes out.
I don't think they really fully snout out in this one. They just get like really quite hairy. Like there's a bit where they kind of, as I said, like they're cutting back and forth and their face gets a little bit more bumpy and a bit more hairy. And there's a bit where it just like, cuts to her face and she's suddenly got like mutton chops, like she's Noddy Holder from Slade or something like that in the middle of a werewolf sex scene. Oh my God. And then they're both kind of semi-formed werewolves howling at each other. And where they actually get the full werewolf snout, it's not in this practical makeup effect thing. You get a long shot of the fire. And it's like a 2D cartoon animated like silhouette.
It's just a cartoon.
Of two wolves boinking and howling at the moon as the camera pans up to the night sky. It's very strange.
It's so bizarre. We were talking at the time whether or not, is this something that we're noticing because we've got it on DVD and maybe there's a little more like definition to it? Would people in the cinema have noticed it was a cartoon? Would they have cared?
Yeah, it's hard to tell, like in kind of like to with special effects in films as they are now. Like you wouldn't really even have those practical effects if this film was being done now. Everything you would assume would be CGI, and so this seems to be like the 2D animation is that was what they had at the time. So I think just because that was the limits of special effects, you would just be like, okay, cool. I'll go with that. I don't know if it would really take you out of it.
Yeah.
Because it kind of does. Watching it now, you're kind of like, Hello,
baby.
But it's actually quite nice to see. I quite like that. I appreciate that, like, okay, that's how they wanted to do it. And it's just interesting to see it in there.
Now, I need to correct another boo-boo. Earlier on, I believe, on the podcast, I said that the special effects were done by Rick Baker.
Mm.
Now, the end credits list Rick Baker as a special effects consultant, but special creature effects by Rob Bottin, who is also a much respected fellow. I just wanted to clear that up in case Mr. Bottin is listening as like, hey, give me my due. dude, respect you.
Yep. So after this has happened, like, and Bill is now full on wolfy, Terry comes up to the...
Terry is the female reporter. Yeah. Yes.
She goes up to tell Karen what's been going with their research into Eddie the Mangler. And so Karen greets Terry by giving her a big hug and saying, hello, good friend.
That's a weird thing to say to anybody.
That's just a weird thing to say. And then they go and have a picnic. And then Terry's just like, oh, shit, I brought a load of meat. I completely forgot that Bill's a vegetarian. You know, like, was completely signposted at about four different points in the film. Bill, I'm so sorry. And then you just cut to Bill with a massive, like, turkey leg just being kind of, it's okay. I'll get hungry enough, I'll eat anything. Nom, nom, nom. And that's when you go, like, pretty obvious what's going on here, isn't it?
Now, I will say that, you know, this film is leading up to a little bit of a reveal, and we probably do need to move the plot train forward a bit. The reveal is signposted, you know, it's not a big twist. It's not a big surprise, really, is it?
Yeah. I mean, Eddie the Mangler is alive.
He's escaped the morgue. He comes from the colony.
He chases down Terry. Terry finds his cabin in the woods near the colony. She also finds like the view that he had drawn, like where they got, oh my God, it's here. Here's the place that he was drawn. And we get the other full on wolf reveal.
Yeah, when Eddie comes
back. When Eddie comes back. So like a wolf nearly gets Terry in Eddie's cabin and she chops the wolf's hand off with a hatchet, which is really cool because it kind of shrivels up and then it puffs back up again and turns back into a human hand that's twitching away.
This bit's amazing. And she just looks at it and goes, no,
yeah,
no, it's so good.
Yeah. And then she runs back. She calls Christopher up on the phone and is telling what's going on. And he's like, have a look through the files, see if there's anything for Eddie there.
Eddie Quist.
Eddie Quist is his name. And she goes and looks through Quist. And so
finds
it's like
T.C. Quist.
T.C. Quist. Marsha Quist. And Eddie Quist. And oh, and the best bit is that when she takes out the file that says Eddie Quist, like she's putting them on top of the filing cabinet, and as she takes that one up, this wolf's hand just picks it up and takes it out of her hand. And at that point, I went, oh my god, it's really good. Like it feels like it should be like a cheesy moment that you should see coming, but actually, it just really just sneaks out at you. Mm. And then she looks up. Big fucking wolf.
Now, the way these wolves look, oh my god. Now, I've been upset by werewolf stuff in the past when the people literally just turn into dogs, you know, wolves. I don't, you know, on all fours, they're just scary, mean, aggressive dogs.
Oh, this is more boring. Anthropomorphic.
Yeah. I also don't like it when people just turn into hairy people, maybe a bit bigger.
Mm.
This is something else. They're, oh, I don't know. They're at least 8 feet tall. You know, they're kind of hunched over, but they're really tall. They're kind of, their legs are like a dog's leg, but they kind of just walk along on just their two back legs. Yeah. It's kind of creepy. They've got these big pointy ears that I think are quite distinctive. They're like really high, tall, pointy ears.
Yeah.
And like big, thick black fur. And they just look fucking scary as shit, man.
Yeah, and then basically that's it for Terry. Basically, the wolf picks her up and bites her neck out. And it's really sad as well. Just like when she dies, there's a kind of like a quietness to it. It's not like in a slasher film where, you know, someone's being strangled and then it just finishes with a boom and it's done. It kind of goes out with a bit of a whimper and you just feel like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And like so Terry is the only... She's like the only like human character I think that dies in the film. She's like the only casualty, I think.
I think you might be right.
So it's not a high body count in terms of goodies.
No,
I'm going to say. So
there also aren't that many goodies. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, so basically now what happens is Karen finds Terry's body in this room and then Eddie is there in the doorway. He's like, "Hey, you remember me, Karen?" And he looks like half rotten and he's got a bullet hole in his head
from where the cop shot him.
Yeah, because obviously that didn't kill him, but he hasn't properly healed over yet.
There's this brilliant line where he goes, I want to give you a piece of my mind, and then he reaches into the hole in his head and pulls the bullet out.
Yeah,
well done. Touché.
Yeah. Oh dear. And then we get our second big transformation scene.
This one's the bigger one, right? Hulk out.
It goes on for a long time.
They do this cool thing with, like, it looks like they've maybe put condoms or something on the guy's face underneath latex and then blown air into them.
Yeah, so his face is, like, bubbling. Mm. And, like, his arms are bubbling. Maybe it's dated a little bit, I think, because it's a bit too bubbly. It's get that like pulsating, gross skin thing going on, but maybe it's a little bit too extreme. The bits that are really fucking cool in this transformation is when like the wolf snout kind of elongates out of his face. So it's like this face kind of like crunching and getting longer. That is really cool.
Yeah.
The only thing is like it just goes on forever and Karen is just stood there looking. And it goes on for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Now, this will be an interesting thing to kind of see as we go throughout the franchise. Are the transformations handled in kind of the same way?
Mm.
So one of my questions is, had Karen had this sudden injection of bravery and just been like, fuck this, I'm getting out of here and run for it, would Eddie the Mangler have been able to chase her mid-transformation?
Yeah.
You know, because they say he can change whenever he wants. Can he stop halfway through?
Yeah, but it takes a long time and it seems to be really kind of taking it out of him.
Mm.
But then basically, as soon as he's done transforming, she throws like a vial of acid in his face.
Yeah, burns it all up.
Yeah, and then she runs off and she gets nabbed by a bunch of the other people from the colony because shock horror... They're baddies.
They're all werewolves.
Yeah.
Even the psychologist.
Yes.
He's their leader and he is a werewolf, but he's less of a baddie because the point of the colony is he is trying to modernize the werewolves. He's trying to teach them how to not be savages, because the old man one, the crazy Ralph guy, he's going, oh, it's not natural, it's not natural, we should go back to the old ways. We're, like, I don't want to live off cattle. And another one of them goes, yeah, humans are our cattle. Yeah. And then the psychologist is like, no, if we're going to survive, we need to learn to live happily alongside humans. And that this is what I was talking about earlier about the rule with if you get scratched, whether you are whether you are a werewolf or not. I think the reason that he sent Karen to the colony after her encounter with Eddie the Mangler was because she can't remember what happened. So she doesn't know if she's got scratched or not. And so he doesn't know if she's going to turn into a werewolf or not. And he doesn't want her to turn into a werewolf in the wild, unaccompanied, out there causing havoc. So he wants to send her to the colony, observe her. If she wolfs out, then he can be like, don't worry about this. We'll teach you how to handle it.
Okay.
That's what I think is going on. So he didn't know.
Okay.
Because she is not a werewolf.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense.
That's my suspicion.
Okay. That makes a bit more sense. It still seems a little bit like a silly plan, because it becomes very apparent that he has no control over, like, the rest of the plan. Marsha is kind of like, fuck you, buddy.
Yeah, there's this brilliant bit. There's a revolution led by Marsha the Nymphomaniac. Mm. She's like, give her to us.
Yeah, yeah. And at this point, Christopher has shown up with a gun full of fucking silver bullets to try and save the day. He is a very unlikely looking hero. He is a long streak of piss of a man. With this bowl cut hairdo, and he just like shows up with a shotgun and basically just starts fucking killing everybody. But no one's expecting him to have silver bullets. So Eddie is there, like, with his face half rotten away from all this like acid, and he's like, yeah, go on, shoot me. See, it's not going to do anything to me. And so he shoots him in the neck, and he's like, whoa.
Uh-oh, and then he's dead. Gone.
And that happens to a load of other guys, where they just go, bullshit, silver bullets.
My favourite moment in the whole film is when Dr. Wagner, the psychiatrist, comes out, and he's got his arms out. He's trying to be peaceful because, you know, he's not such a baddie. He's like trying to reason with Christopher. And Christopher raises his gun, give a shit, shoots him. And then just as the doctor is about to like fall down dead, he goes, oh, thank God.
Yeah, that's a good bit.
Because he was sick of it, man. And like now he doesn't have to deal with the pressure anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. He doesn't have to wrestle between being a man and a beast.
Yeah, no, that's great. And then basically they manage to lock all the werewolves in a barn and set it on fire, because everyone's a fucking werewolf. They set them on fire and they do a runner.
There's a really horrible bit where you like see the werewolves just burning to death in there, and they're like trying to get out. You kind of can't help but feel a bit sad for them.
But then you think that some of them must get out, because more they kind of chase them down. They bump into like the local cop, who, shock horror, he's a werewolf as well. They have to shoot him.
Then they get attacked by one more werewolf who's on the roof of the car.
Oh yeah,
shoot him,
and it scratches and bites Karen, and then they shoot him.
And it turns out that it was Bill, her husband.
Bill's naked body lying in the back.
So sad.
And so, like, oh, fucking hell. So, like, she's going to be a werewolf now. And then like, her and Christopher are like, we got to warn people. We've got to do something. And so the end of the film is Karen goes back to work at the news station and just kind of hijacks the program and starts doing this big speech about a secret society and people living in the shadows and beasts within and not having a choice, and she starts to transform on television
and
everyone's just like, whoa, what the fuck is
going on? Cuts to kids watching it, like, and people in bars,
and some people are kind of like, whoa, this is some crazy shit. Other people just go, hey, well, look at this is like, you know, some sort of, what is it, some goofy film or something.
There's a cool line where one song goes, oh, it's amazing what they can do with special effects now, and there's this guy at the bar next to him who's just like really, really jaded, and he goes, no, it was real. This is his delivery. He goes, no, it was real, she turned into a wolf and they shot her, that's it.
Yeah,
it's like, really, it kind of hits you.
So this is the thing, like, Christopher shoots her, like Karen transforms and you see her sad wolf.
She's like a little puppy. She's like a cute with a single tear in its eye.
Yeah, and then he shoots her and it's like, fuck, that is a dark and like tragic end to a film. I mean, a lot of like horror films, things
don't end well for people. You know what I mean?
Like, that's true.
Even people who survive, there's maybe a jump scare at the end where they get nobbled anyway. But this one is just, it's just kind of sad.
And then instead of the jump scare at the end, what do we get at the end, Tom?
So as Todd was saying, like, there's this bar where they're all talking about what's on the news, and this guy's at the end of the bar goes, "Hey, buddy, give me the pepper steak and a burger for the lady here. How do you want your burger?" Pan over to the end of the bar. It's Marsha. And she stares down the barrel of the camera. "I'll have it rare." And then the film finishes with the burger patty being slapped on a fucking grill, squished down with the spatula, then the credits roll on a hard close-up of just a burger cooking. It doesn't fade to black. The whole credits is just this big close-up of a burger cooking, and it's really kind of hypnotic. I really enjoyed it.
I think the reason, I don't want to speak for Mr. Joe Dante, the director, but I wonder if the reason that he did that is because he wants you to walk out of that cinema going, "I really, really want to eat some meat."
Yeah.
You know, "I really want to eat meat. That burger looked like it was good and juicy." And then question the beast within you.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Oh, and then it finishes at the end with a nice little snippet from the original Wolfman film.
Yeah, just a little cut.
Yeah, just a little post-credit sequence.
And that's the film.
And that's it.
That's
and,
the Howling one.
I'd say it's a good one. I enjoyed it. It does something different with, like, with the werewolf sort of genre.
Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of horror film, especially to some of the ones we've watched on this podcast before.
Yeah, and just like compared to the other kind of like wolf specific films I've seen before, like it's a different twist. There's a bit more it's a bit more of a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, as with I think a lot of these films, you're following like the central character is maybe the one that's turned into the has become a werewolf, or you've got two central characters and one of them is a werewolf and one of them isn't. This one, it's, you know, there's something not right at the colony, and then it kind of it unravels. Mm. I mean, I don't know if it would have been such an easy spot when you watched this when it came out, but it is. It's pretty well, you know, you kind of like, you, as soon as you go, there's like, oh, they're all evil. So they're all werewolves. Well, you can see it coming a mile away.
I think maybe the twist for the time is that every other werewolf film I know of, there's always one, a werewolf, the Wolfman, an American Werewolf in London. The twist with this one is that there's a fucking butt ton of them. And they know, I think that the filmmakers know that you're going to assume that there's something afoot at the colony.
Mm.
But I think the assumption is you're going to think that there's one werewolf. Oh, maybe it's Marsha.
Mm.
Oh, maybe it's TC. Maybe it's Eddie back. But
yeah,
you're maybe not, at least maybe in 81, I don't know. Maybe you wouldn't go, fucking, they're all fucking werewolves.
I did like the twist, though, when the doctor isn't as bad as all that he's actually got quite noble reasons. He's still trying to maintain some humanity, whereas they're all just kind of like, give a shit, eat her. Yeah.
That's it, man. It's a fucking, I think it's a really, really criminally underrepresented film.
I think like werewolf films just are like, compared to like vampire and zombie films and stuff like that, in terms of like, you know, your classic monster films, they just kind of fall through the cracks a little bit more. I don't know why. I think werewolves are hard to do. Do you know what I mean? Like you were saying, like how people do werewolves in different ways. Sometimes they're just not scary. Sometimes it's just like some dude in a dog mask.
But, these guys are scary.
This one, yeah, it's a good one. So, I think this is a firm recommend from us.
Yeah, two thumbs up from the bitter end.
Mm.
So
what's the next one, Todd?
So the next one is called, get this, for a start, they drop the. So this one was called The Howling. The next one is just called Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf.
Oh, that instantly sounds like we're getting very, very trashy.
Yeah, it does feature Christopher Lee.
Okay.
Dracula himself. I don't know how big of a role he's going to have.
I can't imagine he'd be... I think he will be like he'll be the doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
In this one. Like he'll have like maybe three prominent scenes.
Yeah. It's going to be really, really interesting to see what they do, because the first film ends and basically everybody's dead. They're all
Christopher's
dead.
Still
Christopher, the kind of semi-hero, is alive.
He's still alive. And then
Marsha.
Yeah, we've got Marsha. So there's nothing to suggest that there aren't more werewolves. But this is what I was wondering when we were watching the film. I was like, oh, okay, is like Eddie the Mangler going to survive? Are we going to have like at least a few films where we've got like a central villain? Because that would be cool. But like,
it's entirely possible that one or more of them made it out of the barn.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Also, we know that Marcia is out there. I would love to see Marcia again. She's kind of weird and creepy and goth.
Yeah, but then it's like, who is she going to... unless they keep Christopher in there. And it depends what the ramifications are of Karen's stunt.
Mm.
Whether or not people... Believe it.
Yeah.
Whether or not, like, something, you know, like Christopher gets arrested for basically shooting someone on the, live on the television. It would be really cool if they do address all that stuff rather than just kind of take it, like, they, you know, kind of like ignore the loose threads. Like, I want them to pull at those threads.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be really interesting to see. Maybe the sister in the subtitle of Your Sister is a Werewolf, maybe that purely was
a reference.
Karen White, maybe the one who is dead now, our heroine, and maybe there's going to turn out that she has a sister or a brother who is now the new, and they're like, I saw my sister turn into a werewolf on the TV.
Oh, yeah,
like,
maybe.
I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah. Well, we will find out next time.
Before we wrap things up, I would just like to attempt the first appearance of a new spot here on The Bitter End. What I like to... I'm going to present the very first Endy Awards prize. Ooh. This is The Bitter End's own version of the Oscars, which we're going to be awarding actors who demonstrate an incredible amount of just enthusiasm, who approach the film as if it was absolute Oscar gold.
Yeah.
And just really give it their best shot no matter what they've been... No matter what hand they've been dealt, they will receive an Endy Award from us. Tom, I thought we could perhaps take this in turns.
Yeah.
If you don't mind. So maybe this episode I'll do one and the next episode you'll present one, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
Now, it's hard to do this because it's perhaps a bit of a sarcastic award. And the thing is that this film, I think, is really, really good. So I'm just going to be sincere and I'm going to give the very first Endy Award to... the actor Dee Wallace, who plays our heroine, Karen White. Because, my God, she does a really, really good job in this film of being kind of a what you might call a scream queen, but who's also, like, I wrote down in my notebook near the start, she's my fucking hero, man. Mm. Like, the way that she goes into that sting operation with Eddie the Mangler, the way that she's, like, faced all these werewolves at the end, and then she's like, no, I'm just going to have to do this. I'm going to have to deliver my speech knowing that my mate is then going to shoot me.
Mm.
The tremor in her voice when she delivers her last line, which is like, I'm going to show you that this is real. I'm going to make you believe.
Nine, I'm going to show you something. Make you believe.
My God, I believe.
Yeah.
Like, she is so intense.
Yeah, because there's actually a really good scene where she finds Terry's body, and she, like, Terry's body is covered up with this, like, cloth, and she, like, pulls it back and just sees the body, and she's just silent, and there's no, like, big scream. It's just, like, I don't know, almost like she was expecting it or something, and it's, like, really, it was a really cool, different reaction. You just expect to be like, ah! And then she'll turn around and then there'll be a werewolf. There is a werewolf in a minute and there is a big scream.
And then she screams.
But in that moment, it's just very still and silent and sad.
Mm.
And there's a lot of that in this film. And it's just nice and different.
It's quite haunting.
Mm.
And so, Dee Wallace, I'm proud to inform you that however many years after the fact, you have now received the coveted first ever Endy Award from us at The Bitter End. Congratulations. Whoop. We will present another Endy Award next episode after we have watched Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf.
Mm-hmm. Fun times. So that's us.
Until then, thanks very much for joining The Bitter End. I've been Todd Jordan.
I'm still Tom Denny.
Ah, woo!